program.
It's time for action, gentlemen.
Gee, I'm very hot.
Program complete. Listen when ready.
And Tessa.
Starting recording. Let everyone know they're being recorded. You're all being recorded.
Thank God, because if you forget to hit the button again, I swear.
I've never forgotten to hit the button. I have hit red button that should be the fucking record button.
And you've not saved the recording. But
and I've saved it and let it expire inside of Skype.
30 days. It's there for 30 days.
I will never let you forget it.
It's the only time I didn't do like all of the saving right after we were done.
30 days.
Did the re-record make for a better episode though?
Yeah.
No.
I think so, but it's tortured Phil. Have you heard this story, John?
I believe so, but you can tell it again.
It was the last Christmas special we did, right? One before. We did Anna and the Apocalypse, and we brought on the Sirens of Horror. And we brought them all.
I do remember the story, but go ahead, yeah.
And Phil hated the movie.
Really?
And then I let it expire in Skype until it was gone, and then we had to get on a phone call and be like, hey, Phil, sorry, we lost the recording. And he's like, real funny, guys.
I'm like, yeah, you're hilarious, ha ha.
Like an hour of Jeff and I being like, no, dude, we really did. Like, I was like, I'm really sorry, I really did mess this up. We have to get them back on, we have to redo it.
But that luckily, realization finally hit me that they weren't screwing with me, oh.
He was not happy.
That's sad. That's one of the first movies.
I am not a happy camper.
Yeah. That's one of the first movies my wife and I saw in the theater together.
Oh.
Oh yeah. It's a great movie. I love that movie.
It's wonderful. The soundtrack is incredible.
Yeah. I don't think we've ever picked a movie that Phil has liked.
Well, I was gonna say, you know what? This year
Spaceballs?
Yeah, I liked last year's. That was good.
This year to make it up, maybe we should let Phil pick Santa... the Christmas special.
Oh, Violent Night.
Violent Night was good.
Yeah.
You didn't hopefully like part 2 will be out. What's that?
You didn't like Galaxy Quest?
Yeah, I like Galaxy Quest.
Oh, you're talking your holiday special episodes.
Galaxy Quest was one of them, yeah.
Yeah,
well, we did Star Wars holiday episode, we did Galaxy Quest, we did Spaceballs, we did Anna and the Apocalypse, and then we did Violent Night.
Yeah, but you know what?
Yeah, so just just Anna and the Apocalypse.
Oh, okay. I don't pay attention.
The Jefferson Starship song on the holiday special, though, set the sky on fire. Or Light the Sky on Fire, that is an amazing song.
Sure.
That's the only good thing about the Star Wars Holiday Special, is that jam. It's a good one.
It's hilarious. I think it was watching High Mark Hamill try and do his lines, but yeah. Whatever.
With his smoking engines.
You could tell he was blitzed, but...
Gone. Carrie is like no memory of recording that.
All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Nerd Trek podcast. We're going to do an official start here at some point. Today, we are doing DS9 Season 4, Episode 10, Our Man Bashir, first aired on November 27th, 1995. So, actually,
yeah, whatever.
Episode of its own. Phil loved this one. You can tell.
Wait, does Phil not like this episode?
John specifically requested this one because he loves it so much.
Yeah. Oh, this is going to be a great recording then.
Oh, wow.
And sorry, Jeff, John. You have to meet
how
Phil.
How long ago did I request this episode?
Oh, gosh.
A couple
Way
years.
Before we did DS9.
Yeah, I think we were in TNG still when you requested this one.
Yeah.
I just remember we were coming up on it and we're like, we were going to record 3 and we're like, nope, it has to be 2. John had to have this one. Like,
we had to shift some stuff around, but it worked.
But we were like, you've been telling us for years, if we had blown past it, we would have had to re-record it twice.
There was 2 that I didn't want to fuck up on. It was this one with you and then the Tribble one with Kalia. Like, that's one I cannot fuck that up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We missed first one.
This is... this is definitely probably my favorite DS9 episode. Probably. And wow. I have a interesting relationship with DS9.
All right, well, hold on. We're here with Jeff. I'm your host.
Oh, yeah, let's get through the intros before we wreck this thing.
And Phil.
Hi, everybody.
If you've been listening
John,
this long.
John is our special guest, John St. Laurent, who has been listening.
Sorry, everyone.
Yay! It's okay. My brain is not attached to me today, so.
Yeah, David would pick up his imaginary kid.
Well, the kid is not imaginary, but the location was.
That's true. Although, to be fair to all parents out there, scheduling can be a little wonky.
Don't try to defend me, Jeff.
I mean, fine, I won't defend you. Fuck
we
you.
We don't. Don't worry, then.
But
I'm
so
late
that we can.
I had to get a babysitter.
Because you always got to set them up before you knock them down. John, what did you think of this episode?
We're not even.
Oh my. Rewatching this episode, this was always a favorite for me. But rewatching it now, there is way more character work and foreshadowing that I did not anticipate was in a frivolous combination transporter and holodeck accident episode. Because they cram those two Trek tropes into one episode. And there's a lot to unpack in this episode that isn't on the surface.
Okay. That's a good rip-roaring start. Phil, what'd you think of this episode?
Yeah, fucking sucks. Thank you. This is it.
David!
No, I'm actually interested to hear what John has to say, because maybe it'll make me change my perspective a little bit. But yeah, I could literally super cut this episode into all of the scenes that take place on the station. Because, hey, who doesn't like a good transporter accident? Cut out the holodeck bullshit and just push the rest of it together into like a 12-minute supercut probably and be done. So yeah, I'm kind of interested
but
to
are
see.
Are you normally a fan of the holodeck episodes? Or did I make that up?
For the most part it's good. But I don't know why. It might be my dislike of Julian in general. It might be the whole Bond thing. And Garrick's in it, which I don't like him either particularly. So yeah, I'm not a Garrick fan at all.
What?
Mm-mm. No, the mysterious. Ooh, who's Garrick? What is he about? Blah blah blah. It got so overplayed. I was just like, no, I'm done. I don't care. He works for the Obsidian Order. I don't care.
The homosexual tension between Garrick and Julian doesn't do anything for you.
Don't care.
And I have to admit, I'm kind of right down the middle, because while I didn't think it was a terrible episode, it did feel a little busy, which might be what John is referring to as having layers and layers and all not being on the surface.
Yeah, no, this episode's an onion.
But it tasted about as good as an onion, too. So that's why I was like, it could be good if you prep it right.
Maybe if you dip it in batter and add some spicy ranch to it and make it a blooming onion. I don't know. Fry it really good. I don't know.
This episode is a bloomin' onion.
Well, the reason I really wanted to do this episode, not just because I loved it so much, is because I'm a huge Bond fan. And the Bond references in this episode is just like nearly every line of dialogue is an allusion to something.
Yeah.
Keep in mind that this came out a full 3 years before Austin Powers. So I feel like this paved the way for a lot of like the humor that came out in Austin Powers. And even the title itself is a reference to a James Bond parody. It's James Colburn's Our Man Flint, which they made a sequel to in like Flint.
Those are some good movies.
They're great and they're hysterical. They're the original Austin Powers movies.
Interesting. I have never seen those. I consider myself to be a big Bond fan myself. But yeah, this definitely has classic Bond. See, and that's one of those things. My bullshit-o-meter was going off like crazy during this entire episode, but it was almost always all of the stuff in the holodeck. And I'm like, can I really set off the bullshit-o-meter if it's something that's BS inside of something that's BS? Like, the holodeck is obviously programmed by someone inside of Star Trek, so you have two layers of BS that's allowed. In a way.
And so there's actually our first nod is that I think you'll find out. I'm not exactly what sure of DS9 episode of DS9 it's revealed in. But we find out that a lot of Julian's holodeck programs are programmed by a friend of his named Felix.
Nice.
Which also is sort of Garrick's role within this adventure as well.
Yeah, and then Felix tying back to the James Bond stuff. And
exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of meta elements happening on top of each other in this episode that's really fun when you start and think about it.
That's true. I didn't even think about that. Huh. But yeah, just in general, I was like, somebody programmed the episode to be like an old Bond one. And if somebody, you know, four or five, however long in the future it is, mm-hmm. tries to go back and rewrite it, it's going to be a caricature of what it was to begin with.
I mean, he's got the same initials, you know, like all good Bond films and good Indiana Jones movies. It opens with the last chapter of the adventure you didn't see.
Ooh, okay. That's true.
Yeah, there's a lot of elements going on in this episode that I really, really dig.
Okay, we'll swing back around to John. Jeff, what did you think of this episode?
So I actually really enjoyed it. I'm not much of a big fan of transporter accidents and holodeck stuff because I the safeties are off. Then like, why do you ever fucking use this thing? And transporters are a death trap. I'm fully on board with Dr. McCoy on this. Transporters are a death trap. Weird shit happens. But I like this one because I think just to see Julian and Garrick and how their personalities match and kind of mesh more, and then how they even Garrick has this breakdown of like, this isn't what real spies do. And then it like switches, and then it's like they're kind of like going into each other's kind of territory. And I just like the dynamics of it. And then also this reminded me of two other things. So Waterworld came out in 95 in the summer. This came out in the fall of 95, and it's and he floods the earth, and then Mount Everest is his little island. That's Waterworld.
Oh, right.
But it's also Lex Luthor.
Yeah, it's also like a Lex Luthor kind of.
It's a very Lex Luthor, James Bond villain kind of plot.
Yeah, like let's kill the world.
Sure.
Yeah. But then it's also a Kingsman a plot, because Sam Jackson wants to like thin the herd in the Kingsman and only save the elite people. So it's also like a Kingsman plot.
Well, it's also Moonraker. So yeah, like
it's like a little bit of everything.
The three Bond movies this episode is drawing from the most is The Spy Who Loved Me, Moonraker, and On Her Majesty's Secret Service. It's basically those three plots rolled up into one.
Yeah, this evil person is like wants to take over the world and do all these like crazy things that in real life would never happen.
Yeah,
because I'm like, even the science of that, which we can get into in a bit, but just that the whole idea, he's like, and then what happens? And I'm literally going, what happens? Like, what is it he thinks is going to happen? Because
yeah, I don't know a geologist to ask about that. Sorry. I'm a lot of scientists. Yeah.
Well, does someone want to go through and like break down like what is happening in the plot, and then we can chime in, or is Phil just so like checked out on this episode that he just doesn't care? I'm surprised.
Honestly, we usually just kind of say I like this and I like this, and that's how we work our way.
I dislike John knows so much. I basically fast forward through all of the scenes that take place in the Bond section, and I just watch the DS9 stuff.
So Phil, remind me, have you gone through DS9 before?
I've seen everything.
Okay. Cause there is a lot of this is building with Julian and Julian's future revelations in this episode. Especially,
I guess I just never connect it. This is probably my fourth or fifth watch through of DS9. Because
Garrick is definitely picking up on Julian is much more than he is allowing even his friends to know. Like, I think this is the episode that really starts to, the secret agent, Section 31... Sorry, I don't know how much we're spoiling stuff.
Spoil it. We always spoil the shit for me.
But
people are listening to this.
Like, even the shot Julian takes at Garrick, Garrick is surprised at his skill with the weapon. And there is a very, very good reason for that.
But is there, or is it just because he's on the holosuite a lot?
Oh, no, you don't. who Julian is, right?
He does, but I don't know. I guess the argument could be made because looking back, it's kind of hindsight.
Yeah, but also it's Ronald D. Moore, and I feel like these seeds were being planted.
Probably.
I'm guessing he turns out to be Section 31.
No, but He's got sections.
We don't know.
No, because at this time there is no section 31.
I guess this is a show that's like 30 years old. If I haven't watched it by now, I can't get mad about spoilers. So.
Yeah, but I do want to try and preserve spoilers for you as much as possible, because even though you have it is an old show, this is new for you, and that's kind of part of our journey is you seeing this kind of the developing of the Star Trek universe.
Oh, that's true. All right.
There's also a lot.
We care about preserving things for me.
There's a lot of.
We try to not spoil major plot lines and stuff for you.
There's a lot of building with Eddington in this episode, as well as Rom. Mm-hmm.
I like that stuff. Just Rom is like, this, and this needs to be fixed, and I can access. It's behind the spatula. This is a solid Rom episode too.
Yeah,
the smart cookie.
He gets to show off. But why DS9 doesn't have enough memory capacity to be able to store?
Just pull like a Scotty, store them in the pattern buffer.
They stored in the buffer for a long time. Smaller ship, like this is a station. Well,
like Nurse Chapel was doing it as a triage, like in the TOS era. Like, come on.
Yeah, but it gives them that kind of ticking clock of like, oh, it's going to break down. It gives them like a time
which
frame.
They need to move the plot line along.
Not only like the commander that was like, format the C drive and put it all on there. Like, just
not only that,
drive it.
This episode does an excellent job of it keeps raising the stakes, like a good Bond episode, like with Garrick turning against him and Julian having to make a decision, and also Julian realizing that he's no longer playing a game. Like, for all intents and purposes, this is real life, and he can't be James Bond until he basically calls the bluff that Bond would probably, and that's one of the many reasons that I think On Her Majesty's Secret Service is one of the, it's my number three favorite Bond film of all time, the George Lazenby one, because it's so out of left field when it comes to a Bond movie, because Bond essentially becomes a bad guy, not to infiltrate the bad guys. He literally becomes the heir to a criminal organization. Like, unabashedly, he was going to inherit a criminal organization because he married Diana Rigg. He did it out of love.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought that was such an interesting take, because much like Sisko, Bond rides a line between being a hero and a villain. And there's a lot of meta work going on right now with Sisko and his character, who is very aptly named Hippocrates.
Yeah,
because we're dealing with the hypocrisy of Sisko. And one of the reasons, like, I kind of fundamentally have a moral issue with DS9 is Sisko goes to some places that you don't really come back from.
But do you feel that's probably more realistic than in this like utopian Star Trek universe?
It's not what I want in Star Trek.
Mm. That's why, like, you don't like Discovery.
I don't like being lectured to. I like learning about the characters through characters' interactions. I don't want a monologue at me all the time.
You got me monologuing. Who needs a good monologue?
You sly dog.
Sly dog. Yeah.
Fair. That's fair.
No, that totally makes sense. And I haven't seen the later Trek, but. If it does get kind of like that, I could see it not being my favorite either.
I like Star Wars being Star Wars. I like Star Trek being Star Trek. This is when Star Trek got way too Star Wars for me.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get into the next episode, it really jumps the shark into Star Wars.
Yeah, that's a whole other.
Everyone will have to listen to the next episode to find out what he's talking about.
Teasers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Teaser.
Teasers.
I did like in this one how they at least kind of separated out, like, well, the holodeck got their physical signal, you know, but then like their neurons, like their neuropathic signal is tied somewhere else, and they have to kind of re-merge those. Like, I did like that kind of aspect of like, well, it is just all kind of data in the machine, and it's like, what is, you know, like, what do they do with it?
Yeah, I could definitely say this at least answered the questions that popped up, which is usually one of my bigger frustrations with Star Trek episodes, is despite the BS, I'll just be like, well, what about this, and what about this, and what about this? And they'll be like, nah, we're moving on. And this one, they tried to be like, well, this is why they look like them, but don't act like them. I was like, okay, it's a, you know, it is kind of a BSE explanation because it's just data. Data is data to a computer. The type of data doesn't really tend to matter that much when it comes to data systems if you're talking about storage. But we're talking in the future. Maybe they've created different kinds of things. It could possibly happen. So they were like, yeah, at least this got stored over here and that got stored over there and it tried to keep it together.
No, it's just like your favorite episode, 1100101.
You keep Barnard's out of this.
I really love episodes where the ensemble gets to have fun. And and when you read interviews with the cast, everyone puts this at the top of their list.
They all love it. Yeah.
At how much fun they had.
It's different. Yeah, they get to be someone
like,
else.
Like Agent,
it's not their normal.
Like Kira is basically doing Agent Triple X from The Spy Who Loved Me, you know, which is great. And like, I really wonder how much Number Two was inspired by Falcon and Austin Powers. I love always seeing Colm Meaney as a bad guy. We don't see it too often in his acting, but when he does play a bad guy, like, he's amazing. I don't know if you guys ever watched Hell on Wheels with Anson Mount, who played Christopher Pike. But but Colm Meaney plays one of the main antagonists on that entire show, and he's incredible in it.
Nice. Mm. I'll add that to my list.
Hell on Wheels.
Mm. Yeah, fantastic. It's about the railroad expansion west. And the race of the two different railroads, like meeting in the and getting to San Francisco. And it's really, really a great show. And Anson Mount is the star who plays Pike on Strange New Worlds.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
And he had amazing hair even back then.
I think this is the episode because there's always kind of that debate with the transporter of, like, is it really them or does it kill off the original one? And then the new pattern is like a clone or like a new one. This episode is like, no, it kills you off. And this is like a new person every time. This solidified it for me.
Are you guys Michael Crichton fans?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah.
Have you read Timeline?
No.
They don't really get into it in the film. The film is awful, but the book is really kind of horrifying. And it basically, transporter technology, as it's described in Star Trek, is kind of the same as time travel as it's represented in Timeline. Mm-hmm. And yeah, basically you are destroyed and then recreated. So no one knows if you're really dead and that is just a copy of yourself. Like, are you just being destroyed and copied over and over and over again? And the way Timeline does it is the more you travel, the more there are transcription errors.
Mm.
Okay.
So like, your arteries could be like a half a micron off, but it still leads to internal bleeding.
Ooh, interesting. Because like, then if you make a copy of a copy of a copy, eventually it's going to break
down.
You get
the multiplicity effect. It's not quite as clear as the original.
Stupid Michael Keaton.
I've written this amazing book called Woolly, and it's about the true story, how we're trying to bring back the woolly mammoth for actual real world conservation and trying to save the planet. Like, it's fascinating about preserving permafrost in the Siberian tundra. It's really incredible. And it's about the science that's been going on at Harvard.
Then the park they're going to build and all the stuff that gets loose. Yeah, I've seen those.
I've seen something like that. They only hire one IT guy to run the entire thing. Yeah.
When you're getting down to it and you're just like figuring out the building blocks of what makes a human, it really is just data.
Dino DNA.
Or data inside of a brain, inside of a meat mech with bone armor.
Weird, man. It's creepy. Learning more. The more you learn about it, the more you don't know, but also the more it freaks you out because you're like, oh, parts of data.
It's one of those things when you really start to think about it, you're like, ugh. Just
get halfway down the road and you're like, I'm good. I think I'm going to close it there.
Yeah. It happens when you go down the rabbit hole. Yeah.
That totally makes sense. But yeah, despite no matter what other bullshit was in this episode, whatever else was liked or not, I really did like how they had the comparison of like what a James Bond film is compared to actual intelligence work when Garrick's like, the hell, I got in the wrong intelligence agency, because he's put up in like a suite pretending to be a really rich guy.
Well, like I love Cardassian culture because it's fascinating to me. And I love, like, Ferengi are my all time favorite Star Trek race, because anytime a race can be a sounding board for mankind, like, those are always my favorite. And just like, they're almost a parody of what a human is. Like, they take it to the extreme, which means you can deal with crazy, crazy sociological ideas and it's okay because it's the Ferengi. The Cardassians are kind of like it on the flip side when it comes to like the really dark stuff. And I don't remember what episode it is, but at the end of this episode, Garrick says, when he's talking about, oh, I learned a lot about of intelligence and spycraft, that indulging in fantasy keeps the mind creative. And there's an episode, and I can't remember which one it is, but Garrick has a line where he's talking about mystery novels, and he's talking about how Cardassian mystery novels are the best because everybody's always guilty, but the mystery lies in why they are guilty.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of ties into him not being able to think a certain way because he's lived in the Cardassian intelligence community so much. And I think he was able to grow in his duplicitousness in this episode.
Because if you grow up in that and you're just not as creative, you don't have a fantasy, you don't have the imagination for it, then this is all wild and new for him. But he's definitely changing just because of his friendship with Julian.
Exactly. And I think that when this series ends, that's one of the reasons why Garrick is in the position to be what he is at the end of the show.
Because of that exposure to it.
Because of that exposure and his friendship with Julian.
Certainly that makes sense. I was thinking kind of the other way, though, of like intelligence. Every other intelligence show I've ever seen is usually not slick spies running around, you know, in suits in penthouse apartments and stuff. And that's kind of what they're getting at here, is like, it's usually grunt work. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not.
Oh, James Bond is a complete fantasy.
Exciting thing. Because it is. It's a fantasy.
Yeah.
And so I kind of liked that, where, he's just like, I got into the wrong intelligence agency because you're put up in these fancy places with all these beautiful women and everything.
Although I do. It's funny because there's that kind of historical thing where it's possible that James Bond was based off of Christopher Lee. And I'm like, I'm totally on board with that.
Yeah, but there's a lot of inconsistencies in Christopher Lee's stories.
No.
Inspired by,
not actual, but just like, but then that brings into that kind of, because he was in
part of the Desert Rats and all that.
Yeah,
stuff.
In the war, but then he was also creative in the actor side, and so it's like you kind of have a little bit of that in James Bond, and then in Julian in this, you have to play the part, and it's all part of this whole fantasy.
Yeah.
Not a bad episode. It's fine. We keep like stalling out. I'm like, we gotta keep moving
because our host is just leaving these gaps and it bothers me.
Host has no brain today, I told you. I did like this episode. I think on the Devilmeter is not necessarily going to be the highest score. I'm not quite in John's tier with the whole thing. I'm going to give it a 7, solid 7.
I mean, that's good for David.
That is.
I mean, yeah, you're not wrong.
Definitely scored higher than most, but you're right.
Yeah.
Can we also give a shout out to John? So I think John is probably one of the maybe like 5 people who has like listened to pretty much every show that we've done.
Probably.
So thank you, John.
Have you listened to everything, John? Or
like no, most of it. I've known you guys for a while now, so
yeah. But he's a fan. I appreciate that.
Like, he's definitely a friend of the podcast, friend of us. No, he had wasted that much of his life listening to
this. I mean, we play the RPG together.
It's true.
We do. That is true. Star Trek Tabletop RPG, which we may have some recordings of something coming out sometime around some...
Yeah, fingers crossed. If we all can get our Game Master, our character sheets on time.
I know. I need to actually like run the stats on my player.
Well, you got
to
call me out like that, John, huh?
Yeah. Oh, I did want to point out one of my favorite things in this episode, and I was going to try and find a copy of it online. is the mashup of the James Bond theme and the DS9 theme as they were escaping from the laser.
Oh,
did you guys not pick up on that? It's so good.
Now that I think about it, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, there's a mashup of the DS9 theme and the Bond theme as they're escaping.
That's awesome.
Identifiable as the Bond theme, but it's the Bond styling doing the DS9 theme.
Like that.
Yeah, but as the DS9 theme.
Oh, that's cool. Nice.
It's fantastic.
I like, it's funny in this one how Jadzia is like just, she has very little lines. She's just like, she's the attractive like scientist who's like, oh, yeah, he just wants you for your intelligence, but I want you for your body.
So I was gonna touch on that. There's like a double meta element going on there that's a little awkward, I think, for everyone involved. But sure, you know, when we met Julian was just nothing but pining for Jadzia, you know, and I think this is the only on-screen kiss they share. So you kind of wonder what's going on inside Julian's mind. But then on top of that, I'm sure we are all aware of Terry Farrell's issues being on DS9 and being a quote-unquote sex object, especially with some certain producers. So like the fact that he was wooing her through her physical looks and sexuality outside of her mind, and that's how Julian escapes. There's like a double tier of uncomfortable meta-ness going on with Jadzia in this episode that's really uncomfortable.
Oh yeah, because it's like every dream that he's had, yeah, and then it's like this other layer of like what went on behind the scenes.
Garrick even makes a comment about that of like, oh, in world starting to see your fantasies. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very uncomfortable when it comes to Jadzia in this episode.
Yeah, and then I don't know if him and Nana were married at this point.
Yeah,
they were just dating,
I think. At the time.
Nana's so good.
Oh, like, she's great.
She's the only Bajoran I love. I can't stand the Bajoran people, but I love every time she's on screen. Man, she's always killing it. Her Mirror Mirror episodes are just the absolute best.
Yeah.
She's great in this one too. And man, Michael Dorn is making love to that cigar in this episode. he is loving every second of that cigar on screen, and it just comes across. I love it.
I know. I kind of wish that we would get to see, I mean, because obviously we watch so much of these actors specifically throughout Star Trek and all the shows just do this show. But it's I would love to see Michael Dorn as another character, you know, or to like kind of expand on like what.
You mean not Colonel Worf?
I'm sorry. He's a different Worf.
Yeah.
But it's always nice just to see an actor do other stuff to kind of go, oh yeah, I can see that. Or like it's nice just to see that side of them. You know, when all we do as fans generally is focus on these episodes, you know, or this like 7-year show that they did.
Yeah, you get kind of pigeonholed when you do something for this long, and it would be nice to see them in something else. But
yeah,
unfortunately, that just doesn't tend to happen as much as it should.
And we get a Walter PPK in it, which is Bond's weapon of choice, of course.
It is packed chock full of Bond analogies. Absolutely.
It is. Yeah, it's nonstop. I mean, Worf is basically Le Chiffre from Casino Royale. And then he uses the cigar poison that Agent XXX uses in The Spy Who Loved Me. Like there's constant Bond references. And this was, I don't know if I said it already, it was released the same week that GoldenEye was released. Which was
that's what I was wondering. Was
yeah, it was the first Bond film in like 11 years or something, 12 years. So yeah, like the Pierce public Brosnan's had Bond first on the mind.
Yeah,
because that was definitely when I fell in love with Bond, was when I saw GoldenEye in theaters.
I mean, GoldenEye is my second favorite Bond film of all time.
Yeah, and it was just great. And because of that, I like all of the Pierce Brosnan ones, even though many of them are terrible.
God, they're so awful. But you know what? Die Another Day is like The opening credit sequence to Die Another Day is like my favorite Bond thing ever.
I was going to say, it's one of those ones that's terrible, but I love how over the top it is.
Yeah, I kind of do.
It's Moonraker. It's just absolutely.
Oh, Moonraker is so Moonraker. Insane.
Especially in contrast to the Daniel Craig Action Man per slip version kind of like Bond. Like
serious, yeah.
Where they went back to kind of,
that's
yeah,
not
kind
the flavor of Bond, but like the wacky, like crazy over the top sci-fi plots, like that really.
Well, and that, yeah, that is, well, kind of what happened after Die Another Day. It didn't do great in theaters, and then other studios started putting out kind of the spy films that were a little more realistic.
Jason Bourne, that's why they redid
Bond into like kind of a little darker, grittier, a little more realistic.
I mean, I enjoyed Casino Royale and I enjoyed Skyfall, but that's about it when it comes from.
I had a tough time with Skyfall, but I did love Casino Royale.
The third act of Skyfall is fantastic.
Yeah,
I just bought the entire Bond collection, so if we want to start another podcast about Bond films.
Oh my god.
That would actually be interesting because I've seen so few of them.
Lauren would be all about that because Lauren is just as much a Bond fan as I am.
Diana loves Bond. She would totally do it.
I got free time.
Crap, we just had six hosts. All right. So
done. Yeah. No, because it's funny how, because Bond was so serious for a long time, you know, especially in the like Sean Connery era. And then, George Lazenby is kind of like, he's like a one-off, so we're not quite counting him. And then you get into the Roger Moore area, and then it was like, it was serious, and then it just kind of devolves into almost a parody of itself, but still takes itself seriously. And then Timothy Dalton kind of...
Timothy Dalton
towards serious. And then, but then Pierce Brosnan was like, GoldenEye was great, and then it just went, like, really wacky.
GoldenEye is that perfect sweet spot.
Yeah, where it's like it knows what it is, but it's serious because he's doing serious work. But he's like, I'm also suave and funny. Yeah, it's weird.
Tomorrow Never Dies was a little too something. And then, it just went down the goofy trail.
Also, the reason why GoldenEye works so well is there's some moments of brutality in it as well. Mm. So that's kind of why it works.
Plus, it's got Poromir and it's got an X-Men in it and Nightcrawler.
He's got X-Men. You got Fonka Jensen and Alan.
Which she was also in Star Trek. But then
the woman that Picard has to transfer.
Right. Who imprints on him. Yeah. And then also Michelle Yeoh was a Bond girl in
Tomorrow Never Dies.
Tomorrow Never Dies. So it all comes back to Star Trek.
Big whoop. Saying. Everybody's been in Star Trek.
And everyone's been and everyone's been in Star Wars.
Yes.
A lot of people have. That's absolutely true. All right. I think so last rundown. Nobody died in this one that we care about.
No one died
at all.
Only holodeck characters.
You can't count hologram programs. We've already established that one. It has to be an actual permanent placement death.
Persons.
And they saved all of them in the buffer. They buffered them all.
They buffered them.
Buffering.
Oh,
buffering.
Speaking of... How does the station even have access to a private citizen's memory bank?
Oh, because security is shit on all of those stations and the ships and everything.
You don't think Mark has firewall on top of firewall on top of firewall when it comes to his own personal memory for his holosuites? I understand, like, maybe the Cardassians, like, not allowing him to do that. But when it comes to the Federation... Like, that seems like a serious breach of
well, but he didn't even want to buy new equipment when something was breaking. He didn't buy new firewalls to put them in place after the Cardassians left.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, what would be there to protect? Because it's my understanding that all of the holosuite programs are run off of memory sticks.
Yeah, that's true. He sells them.
He always is trading that. Yeah.
The question is, all the data on the stick, or is the stick just like an activation key?
Rod.
And what happens when they wiped the station's memory core?
That's
the one where I'm sitting there as an IT person. I'm like, you don't just wipe the C drive. Like, you wiped out everything.
Did you format it?
I'm like, did you back it up to the cloud? What the fuck are we doing here? What's going on?
Basically, they had to have a Federation cloud somewhere off the server where all this stuff was sent to.
And I mean, and that was...
Like somebody's on their pad, like, looking at the different plans. Like, okay, how big of a backup space do we need? What is this going to run us?
Like, I know Eddington was like under the clock, but like the fact that he just went there, all right, let's just wipe the station's memory and download them into it.
Yeah. And I'm like, Eddington, your security, you need to stay in your lane here. What the hell are you talking about?
Like,
he didn't
try to prioritize
who gets saved. He didn't try to like see if we could wipe out certain things instead of others first. He just was like, the whole thing, nuke it.
Do it.
Why didn't they get them to the Defiant in the first place?
Because it's not connected, because they say later that it's an independent thing.
Well, it had an independent power system and an independent transporter, but
it's an independent memory.
It had the memory to do it. Like, the station has to have more memory.
But he could save like one or two maybe in there. Or like, transport them into there.
Or holodecks or anything on the on the Defiant. I know we haven't seen any, and it's a
probably
small
not. Because it's
one.
No, they make a.
But it's a warship.
They make a point about that it's a warship. It wasn't designed with any of the creature comforts. Yeah, they make a big point of that when they first bring Defiant on.
Yeah,
and this thing was built to rock and roll. It's not for your families and your holodecks. And
then Rom even says, he's like, oh, he can't. He doesn't have Federation equipment, so he can't like.
Interface the Cardassian equipment with the.
That was the one thing I was like, okay, I could see that. Like, that's the like, this is a lightning plug, and I have a USB-C, and I can't. I need an adapter.
Did we just not afford the adapter or something? The adapter was just crazy expensive. They're like, oh, they're charging us for everything.
We're talking
we can't
to Windows,
do this.
Talking to this. That's, well, that's my bread and butter systems integration. So I'm like, ah, yeah, no, I get that one. Yeah.
We gotta have an adapter.
See, but then I think, okay, so I think you're right that the holosuite programs run off of like a stick, like a memory stick. But he still has to draw power from the station.
It's like RAM versus ROM, I would imagine. Hey, ROM!
It's ROM.
It's ROM.
See, I always thought of it as just more of like a Steam key that gets you a game. Like, that's right, the key that you put in as
sure,
a stick, and then
the
you access
still,
the program.
Yeah, the engine is still driving it, but you gotta tell it what to drive.
But the station still has access because he's getting power from the station and life support and all of that.
And as much as I'm sure Quark would want his stuff separated out, I don't know if Sisko would allow it. And O'Brien would find it for sure. He's the most important man in Starfleet.
Well, because even later he's like, what'd you do to my ship?
Yeah.
Like that.
So I could see that. But yeah, I think my favorite part had to be when Rom is like, oh, it's behind the spatula. And he's like, but it's made of this and this. It totally worked. I'm like, that's 100% an IT department in like a small company. We got no budget. Yeah. Well, what can we make work?
It felt very Ghostbusters to me.
Well, just like John duct taping his mic together before we started. It's like, all right, we'll just make this work.
Just do it.
C-stand and some duct tape. That's all you need.
Gum and gumption. We're going to make this work. Like, that's exactly how I would have done it. So I was laughing at that part. Because some of the other stuff, the data things and all, I was like, yeah, all right. It doesn't technically make sense for our stuff, but you can get away with it with future crap. So I was like, all right, it's future crap. But that one I love. Because it is. Quark's not going to spend a dime.
Yeah.
No, because he barely makes a profit off the holosuite anyways.
Yeah. Apparently, which is weird, because you would think that it doesn't cost him anything to run. The Federation's not going to charge him for the use.
It's the power. That is weird. Why isn't he making money off the holosuites?
What's the overhead cost on a holosuite?
Is he charged per hour, I'm guessing? Involved,
yeah.
He's not. I guarantee you, he's not paying the Federation for the use of the holosuites or the power that runs it.
Yeah, he's not getting a power bill.
Yeah.
So he's lying. That's pretty much it.
No, unless Ferengi he's
shenanigans?
Purchasing.
Is this a
Ferengi
shenanigan?
Unless he's purchasing programs to lure in customers, like, oh, I just bought this great new thing. Like, it's like Netflix. We just made this great new show. Come and watch it.
Yeah, I guess I could see that.
That would have been a great scene, though, if he like standing there in the bar and he opens this thing up. He's like, oh, my DS9 G&E bill is here. This is killing me. What's going on?
Look at Sisko.
Damn it. They're raising the rates again.
Do we know what powers DS9? Because it doesn't have like a warp core like a ship does. What's its power source?
I love Julian using reverse psychology on a character named Hippocrates.
I'll just kill the Earth. DS9 has a core. There's miners in there. Are they?
It has six fusion reactors at the bottom of the core of the station.
Because we see them in the Mirror episodes.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, because it's a mining station, basically.
Yeah,
that's right. It was a mining station that they were having Bajorans work on.
Terak Nor.
Yes.
I don't know.
I wouldn't quite qualify it as a shenanigan, huh?
No, it's not a shame.
Darn. We don't get to add anything to our list. Odo didn't change in anything.
Oh, wait for the
no
next
Ferengi
one.
Shenanigans.
Oh, boy.
Wait for and we one. Don't have a column for Star Trek BS, so.
Oh, God, that would be filled. That would be a long list for you,
I mean,
David.
What defines Ferengi shenanigans? I think, like, the Mickey Mousing and Frankensteining of the holosuite kind of is a Ferengi shenanigan.
I think usually it has to be something trying to
play like an active adventure
on someone.
Yeah, it's got to be court. Yeah.
That's usually the argument we have because Jeff likes to go, but that's normal for Ferengis, and we're like, nope, like it's doesn't have to be a shenanigan to Ferengis. It has to be them pulling shenanigans to try and
profit has to be a deciding factor.
So I don't think that one quite works. That's just him being cheap.
Shocker.
There.
All right. Well, I think we beat this one to death. Anybody got any last minute thoughts? Phil, do you like it any better now that John has put forth his thesis?
I might go back and give the whole thing a rewatch just to see if it improves my opinion. Like actually watch the whole thing.
See if it's better the seventh time.
Yeah, maybe it's because I haven't watched much Bond. I don't really care for. I like Bond. I don't have any. Like I would be totally down with doing a Bond watch. But yeah, maybe I'll pick up more of that stuff. So I'll give it another shake. I'm nothing if not fair. Yeah.
I love a good holodeck episode. This is one of the best holodeck episodes. I love how many sets are in this movie too. Especially like on a DS9 budget, like how they were able, especially Julian's apartment, how they were able to get across that mid-century 1960s look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was a budget for sure.
Yeah.
What was that line that Garrick had? He's like, oh, weren't we just in Hong Kong at a club and now we're in Paris at your apartment? And he's like, yeah, it's fine.
The beauty of editing.
Don't worry about it.
Holodeck.
Actually, I have a question. In the story of the holodeck, do they get on a flight and like have a 7-hour plane ride in the holodeck? Or do they just turn a corner and he's like, I'm back home?
I think it's smash cuts.
Yeah, since it's based on Bond, in Bond, they always do that. All right.
Yeah, I just think that's funny.
Or maybe in the holodeck,
sitting there on a plane just staring at each other.
Plane going by, like in Indiana
Jones.
Worst
holodeck ever. Yeah. Just mapping it. That's great.
See that go by for a little bit, and then you're in your apartment. Yay!
Yeah, you walk through the wall, and there's like a woo, woo, woo that goes on. Like a Scooby-Doo flashback or something.
Mm-hmm. It is.
That's funny.
It's like Wayne's World.
Yeah.
All righty. John, do you have anything to plug? We usually have our guest plug stuff. I don't know if you're
you have anything going?
Much of a social media presence.
Absolutely not. no one's told the rest of the world that the strike is over yet. So that's going on still.
Really?
So, yeah. Oh, I've got, watch HBO Max, The Sympathizer. That was one of mine. I was the Daily's colorist on The Sympathizer with Robert Downey Jr. It's really good cool. show. And then nice. Over, I believe, on Apple Plus is Palm Royale. I also did that one. That's with Kristen Wiig and Ricky Martin and Carol Burnett and Laura Dern and Bruce Dern and fantastic cast in that one.
Wow.
Ricky Martin, there's a name I haven't heard in reference in a long time.
Too. He's great.
So, right.
But yeah, really check out The Sympathizer. Sympathizer is fantastic, and there's going to be some really, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's some cameos coming up that are really, really exciting and expert cast.
Sympathizer.
Yeah,
there's based an equalizer and a sympathizer.
Yeah,
and
based on a Pulitzer Prize winning book. It's Mastermind by Park Chan-wook. It's really good. Check it out. It was really great on both those shows.
Nice.
Alrighty, sounds good. Well, thank you, John Sintermont, for joining us for our episode today.
Yeah.
Check out What's Your Trek at the nerdtrek.com, where we got links to our social media sites. You can see our smiling faces staring back at you. You can buy our shit if you feel like it. And as soon as you are done playing your James Bond fantasy, you can give us a 5-star rating and review, and we'll read that out over the air. And while you're there, check out the Nerd Trek Movie Club, where Jeff is on with guests similar to this podcast about movies of all kinds.
We need to do Buckaroo Banzai.
Can. You know, I was practicing the outro all day.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's like I had it scripted.
Next episode. No, sorry.
It's fine.
Although lately we've been making our guests do it, John. But
oh, really?
Poor Stephanie.
Poor Stephanie. Yeah, the last 5 episodes with Stephanie Rose, I think we made her do it once, twice. I don't remember, something like that.
Well, you know, pressure. Julian Bashir will return in Like Bashir.
Ooh, like Flint, there you go.
Not wrong.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Well, thanks everybody for listening. We appreciate it. And
yep.
Talk to you next time.
Bye, guys.
So sad.
You okay?
I hit stop recording. Okay. Stop recording. Stop recording.
Push the button.
I'm pushing the button.
Push it harder.
I can't affect anything in the Skype window. Can someone else stop recording? Are you able to?
No.